And I took the job at Vanderbilt, well, for many reasons. It was extremely congenial. I found that I could keep up with the beer drinkers at Gerst, which was reassuring to me. The night, were you at that night when we went down to Gerst, would all stand around with those great big goblets? I know Jack Tapp was.
Just one night.
It was.
There were several nights.
Yeah.
What one did you have in mind?
Well, the very first one when I saw those goblets come out and realized that I had to drink. That.
Well, that was when you were here on your interview?
That's right.
We took you there on your interview.
That's right. Yeah. And that but it was a very congenial department. And it offered me much more security than I had the possibility, it is not confirmed, to going with Brendan Maher at Harvard on a lectureship. But I felt I was too old for that. I had a family, two kids already, and that was not assured that I was actually going to get that. And Vanderbilt seemed like a very congenial spot. The amount, the incomes would have been exactly the same, but the lectureship was time limited. I knew that, and I just didn't want to take that chance. I felt that Vanderbilt was a much nicer place to be. And I liked everybody, which was important.
Yeah. It was important. It was a big part. It's something that jump started.
Yeah.
I insisted on. I think we hired using that as a criterion. What about how well you did at Gerst? Some of them didn't even give job talks. I remember Bill Call says he never gave a job talk. But Jum says, "Oh, we have too many talks going on around here now." Did you give a job talk?
I don't remember precisely. I was talking about my research, what I had done in my dissertation, but. Which is what most of the students do when they come, getting the background. That's the other thing that Sandy Dean did with me, which really stood out, because the moment I got there, this is September, I'm just beginning to take courses, he says, "I want you to replicate these experiments from the Spence-Taylor background. You'll recruit the subjects, replicate those experiments." He turned it right over to me right from the beginning, getting the subjects, setting up the research, analyzing the data right from the start. The first year project was replicating this research. And that's how I got started in the anxiety. It's a nice way to operate.
Yeah. 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 We talked earlier about the philosophy of the department clinically when you came here, which it was not. It was more Logerian.
That's right.
And that was the cause.
Cal Izzard was the leading fellow. I forget who had been there for a year before me. I don't really know who it was. The name Gil Meyer keeps coming up, whether he was ever a professor.
He was in the department.
Okay.
As a matter of fact, his laboratory was one thing that excited me about coming. But he did developmental work with kittens and mice. So he wouldn't have been in the clinical program.
No. But he was not there when I arrived. I think he had left.
Very possible. Yeah.
But his name keeps coming up. But yes, it was Cal Izzard and George Koppel, who was really very much of a tester, doing evaluations. And I don't know exactly where he was working, but he was already phasing himself out, going into real estate at that time.
Yeah.
And we all lost some money. I got my investment out of it back again. But I don't think Spielberger ever did.
He wasn't part of Wesley Hall land, was
he? Oh, no. He developed at Woodlawn Manor.
I thought that was a success.
Oh, yeah. It was a great success. I mean, he never paid back the people that he borrowed the money from.
Oh, okay.
See, he borrowed the money from Cal, from Charlie, and from myself.
Wow.
And the only person that got the money back, I met him in the hall one day and held out my set, and I said, "You owe me, I forget, $2,500 or something like that. And I want to get that before I'm broke. I need the money." And he paid me back the $2,500 I had invested. But there's a question whether George ever paid back Charlie or Cal.
Ah, okay.
I see. Yeah. But isn't that the way? There's one thing about capitalists, they're greedy, And I think that's what George was pretty good. He tried to interest people over and over again in new investments. And his reputation was not good about paying back. Yes.
Yeah. I just reread Hans Strupp's autobiographic stuff, where he talks about the role you played in getting him here, and she has very nice, kind words about it. You want to talk about that, man?
Well, as I told you, I thought he would make a significant contribution to the department. He was publishing in the area. He was a good speaker. He was very good as a supervisor. And I would expect that, at least in small groups, he would be a good teacher at seminars and stuff. And so I felt he would round out the department. And also, in his field, he was one of the top six people in the United States, maybe one of the top three in terms of how he was respected in the psychoanalytic area. So he was, in my opinion, a catch for the department. Mm-hmm. And I worked on him for more than a year on this. We have had him down 1 year. And I didn't realize he was as cautious a person, but he too had a family that he needed to worry about. And his treatment, even though he was the head of his department at the University of North Carolina, it was a very inferior role vis-a-vis psychiatry. Mm-hmm. And he was concerned about what his situation would be in an academic department. And obviously it was going to be good because he was doing everything a person on the theoretical side, and his particular grand investigation into psychotherapy was an interesting one. So I figured this was a no-brainer. This was a win for everybody. But it took me into a second year to finally convince him. And I think the things were not pleasant back at the UNC in those years.
Mm-hmm. He did mention that.
Yeah.
He didn't like the second level citizenship that he
That's
had
okay.
in the medical program.
That's right. Yeah.
Good. Before we get to your years as a chair,
yes.
Since you came in 65 and you became chair in 70,
I came in 62.
62?
Yes.
Okay. In the intervening years, there was the political activism in the area and the like. Do you have any memories about that or stories
or
adventures?
I sure do. Because I came in 62, there were sit-ins, there was all kind of stuff going on which my students were involved with. And I, knowing my stance on this, the students wanted me very much to get out there in the streets and parade around with them and do that. But I was teaching child psychology at the time, and I had a class of Southern students. In those days, they were well over 50% came from our area. And I explained to the students that when I go in as a professor, I have to teach from what I believe is the correct perspective on which a problem should be looked at. And if I get out there on the streets with you, I'm not going to have any impact. My impact with the students I'm talking to about segregation, child development, education, will have much less impact. I will be identified in advance. I'll not be able to present to people who resent that point of view convincing arguments. And they accepted that. But I had real problems at that time because Brenton Banks, who I had already gotten into the music business here in my spare time, and I could not take Brenton Banks for a cup of coffee at the campus grill. And that bothered me considerably that I couldn't do that. And then I bought this house in 1963, and the...
This one here?
Yes. 1963. And I had begun to play tennis after that heart episode of mine. And I went to the club and joined, and the manager took me aside, and I guess I was the first Jewish person in this neighborhood.
The Seven Hills Club down
That's
here?
Right.
Oh, yeah.
And I was
Which is no longer there, right?
Oh, it's there.
Is it
prospering? Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Well, he was very much afraid that I would be bringing black people to that tennis club. And so I called Kermit Stankel about this, and I said, the man who's hiring me, playing background music in the country music business here, is black, and he's a tennis player, and I want to bring him to play tennis at the Seven Hills Club. And Kermit said, you bring anybody you want to that club. And so the movement was beginning here, and I brought Benton Banks to the club, and there was no problem, you know, at the club. So, but I regard those as very interesting experiences in my living here during that period of time.
Uh-huh.
And then, of course, the students, everyone, they prevailed. I do remember 1967 when Carmichael, was here.
Yeah.
Yes. And we were shut down. The streets were shut down here. And we had the fighting in the streets, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
And
there was a big parade down Broadway of West End.
Yes.
That brought some fighting. I remember that.
Yeah. Well, what happened during that period of time was, and I'm trying to remember just precisely how this occurred. There was a student who had been at Vanderbilt and had gone AWOL from the Army during the night when there was a curfew, and he was afraid that he was going to be picked up and thrown into jail. And I got this call, and I told him, the interesting thing was that there was a record session scheduled for that same night, and I was carrying my violin in one hand, and I met him on the street corner near the hospital and walked him over to the hospital and got him admitted in the psychiatric ward. And I never knew in the end what happened to him, but I got him admitted at least. And he was not picked up by the police. This is a funny experience, I tell you. And then I went off to my record session, which was due to start at 10 o'clock and run till 1 in the morning. So, these things are memories that have very little to do with the history of the psychology department.
No,
interesting personal stories.
Part of our history.
Yeah.